Og þá bjóðum bara Speaker Conference velkomin, Chris.
Take your fucking breath away, I tell you. Better than a shot of dope any day. My name's Chris Raymer. I'm a recovered alcoholic. They just flat take your breath away. I mean, it's awesome. Thank you. You know, it's like, I am so honored to be here. I'll try to make this quick. It's tight quarters here for some of you guys. You're going to get a little hot in here. And I can't tell you the hospitality here. Myers and Peter and I have absolutely been delighted by this experience. It's not anything what I expected, I can assure you. I put this trip off for a year, just dusting them, because it was just unbelievable experience. And I'm sure they'll agree. We get a chance to hear Myers in the morning, and Peter did a great job last night. He's so eloquent. Peter, I asked Peter, I called him on the phone, and I asked him, I said, how many bags do you bring into Iceland? Because this is a long way to travel, you know, and I do a lot of speaking, and I travel a lot, mostly in the States, so I didn't know how many bags to bring. What do you take, you know, and a lot of coats, you know, the usual jokes, and, you know, Peter said he was taking 3 bags. He's taking 1 bag for coats and stuff and clothes, and he's taking 2 for hair care products. Look at this guy's hair. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like the guys. Yeah, Peter, stand up. So these guys, a lot of guys didn't see you this morning. You know, if you want what we have and are willing to go to any lengths, you know, it's like, you know, he's in the bathroom forever on this stuff. You know, it's like, so, I mean, there's a reason that I look like I just crawled out of a dumpster. You know, it took me about 3 seconds to get ready. And great hospitality. I want to thank Peter and Arner and all the guys at the house and anybody else that had anything to do with getting us up here. This was a truly a blessing. Look at y'all. Gotta check this out. Look, y'all want to be amused at all? You know, I got the sheep T-shirt. You know what I mean? We have some sheep testicles waiting for us after we finish talking. I suggested very highly that I did not eat that before, but I'm going to try. I mean, I used to be in the food business. I'll eat anything, you know, and I'm absolutely honored to be here. The nicest people I've ever met. I got to tell you that. Y'all are the most open. I don't know if that's just because you're just bored shitless on this island. I don't know why, but you're just so open. I mean, it's like, you know, I speak around the conferences and spend weekends in conferences, and nobody will ever ask me about this eye, you know, and I've had an endless procession of people coming up. Hey, what's up with the eye patch? What's happening? And then they're like the little kids, can I see it? You know, no, but you can see this if you want. I'd like, fine. I got it. I just think, because in case the two of you in here that have not asked me what happened to the eye, I was in a rock fight when I was a kid, about 11 years old. You know, Mama was right. You know, you get in a rock fight. I was throwing rocks out in the backyard in Texas, and I just didn't duck. And I got hit in the eye with a rock and lost this eye. Yes, I do have an eye. It looks like shit. No, you can't see it. I don't know. I used to tell them when I was growing up, when I was drinking and the disease, I used to tell them, because you could go in like little Vietnam bars, you know, the little beer joints all over the States. Anyway, you could go in there and tell them, and I told them I'd lost it in Vietnam. It has a better ring. I lost this eye in Vietnam than I lost it in the rock fight, you know, and it's like. But I was in this bar in Houston. Some of y'all heard me say, and I told this guy that I was in Vietnam, and we started drinking beers. And it hadn't been too long that we had enough alcohol in me, and I kept talking enough to know that I'd never been out of the state of Texas, much less Vietnam, you know. And I got to tell you, that vet that I was talking to was not amused, you know. I got to say this, if you haven't had your ass kicked by a guy in a wheelchair, you don't want to, buddy, I want to tell you. I still remember laying on the floor of that bar and they listened to the guys egg that guy out. Roll over him again, Jackson. Oh, it's not cool. Everybody asked me if I was nervous. Yes, I'm nervous. You know, I know people that can get up from this podium and not be nervous at all. I throw up before I speak. That's why I sit up here, you know, just, you know, God, please. I'm not praying. I'm begging, you know, God. God, don't desert me now. I know. Here, I mean, it's the truth. You know, I've said this from the podium before, and I can say it with you because we're like kissing cousins now. But I got to, you know, I'd rather kiss a cat's butt than do this. Because I know what's going to happen. Some of you guys are going to enjoy this talk, and some of you guys are not going to enjoy this talk. You know, anytime I validate you and I say that you're doing something well, you like me. And the minute that time I say something that you're not doing so well and I might bring it to your attention, then I'm the bad guy. Y'all with us? Y'all, it's like that in relationships. Your girlfriend tells you you're the best in the West, and then she makes one little comment of a way that you might be able to change, and you're immediately pissed off. All the compliments just went out the door. Some of you have heard my tapes and CDs and stuff around, and you'll hear Myers in the morning. It's the same kind of stuff. Guys, we don't want to piss anybody off, and we're not trying to gun for anybody. It's just that I'm so passionate about recovery. Somebody said earlier, it says, I've heard you on your tapes, and you seem so angry. You know, that's good. That's a tape, you know, and I'm in the middle of a talk, and I'm not angry, but I'm passionate about recovery. I nearly died getting to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I mean, I spent time eating out of dumpsters, and I spent time making a lot of money, and it was real confusing for me. And I spent a lot of time, in 7 years, in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous in the States, in Texas, dying of what we call untreated alcoholism. And I could go in and stay sober for a period of time and leave, and go in, and just like so many of y'all in this room, and it's not necessary, because I never heard the solution. And all I want to do is talk to you about my experience in that. And if my experience, please stick with me. If my experience doesn't jive with your experience, forget it. Don't take it personal. You with us? If you're a hard drinker hanging out in AA and all you want to do is come into the meetings and use them as a dumping ground for your freaking little problems, go ahead. If you think that's your right, go. Please, go ahead. I hope you die soon, but... Here's the problem that we face with. Here's the problem in Alcoholics Anonymous in the States, and I'm sure it's here too. You know, you got a lot of cats. We had a real clear message back in 1935, 1940, when we got the message. The book was published in 39, and we had a real clear message there and a great success rate. And now the message has been garbled up by a bunch of people. I work for a treatment center. I do clerical work for a hospital in Texas, a high-dollar treatment center, and... I got to tell you something. It's a great facility. What we do, the same thing in that facility that we do here in Iceland. We dry you out. We get you away, separated from the chemicals, long enough to get your little head straight to figure out what to do. And then the cats that walk out and get connected with good, strong AA, I wish I could send them all to Iceland. Because I got to tell you, you got a core bunch of people in this room that are kicking butt. Kicking butt. Forget the amount of sobriety, buddy. I'm telling you, passion is in this room. You're the cats I'm talking to. And if you can't identify with what I'm saying, buddy, I just bless you. I, truly, nothing personal. Really. Here's what happened. Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob. Bill Wilson's talking in this little book I'm reading out of. It's called The Big Book. And it talks about, he said, that ought to confuse the newcomer. Yeah. It said, he had a desperate desire to stop. He's talking about Dr. Bob, the co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous. But he saw no way out, for he had earnestly tried many avenues of escape. Painfully aware of being somehow abnormal, the man did not fully realize what it meant to be alcoholic. You with us? And that is so true today in our fellowship. We got a lot of people that are in this fellowship because somebody sent them here or because they drink too much. This great line in this little book, every alcoholic's a drunk. But not every drunk's an alcoholic. Did you get it? You see, that's the problem that we have. We have this idea that if you drink a lot, you're an alcoholic. And that's not true. And that's what the book spends 60 pages trying to explain. Alcoholism is a disease. Drug addiction is a disease. If you've got it, there's just a small percentage of us that have it. And there's about 15% in the States right now that have got it. And if you've got it, buddy, it's fatal and it's progressive. It's going to kill you. You follow us? If you don't have it, then you're going to get to a place where the pain of staying drunk is too great and you'll make some decision based on your own well-being to stop, and you'll have the power to stop. You with us? The book says if you can choose... Here, on page 34. Let me read this one more, and I'll put this down. Somebody help me with my glasses, please. Here, page 34. We read it this morning, and Peter referred to it last night. It says, whether... For those who are unable to drink moderately, the question is how to stop altogether. Drug moderately. Y'all can substitute the words in here, whatever your demon is. There's nobody in here that's moderate anything, I can assure you. But we're assuming, of course, that the reader desires to stop. Now, that's an assumption. I'm looking at this room thinking you all want to be in recovery. But the truth is, some of you guys can't wait to get the hell out of here. Because you don't want to get sober. What you want is the pain to go away. You'll follow us? What you want is the heat to get off. You want that blowtorch to pull back from your butt a few inches so you can move a little bit. You want the woman to come back. You want the job to come back. You want the law to get off your... And then you're going to go right straight back to it. You with us? And again, you're welcome. But you're not going to understand what I'm talking about here. Okay? Here's what it says. Whether such a person can quit upon a non-spiritual basis. That means if you can stop without God, i.e. working the steps... Depends upon the extent to which you have already lost the power to choose whether you're going to do it or not. If you can choose to stop, you're not one of us. Now, you know what I mean by stop, guys? I mean stop. If you can choose to quit and leave it alone, I don't mean for 6 months. I don't mean for a few weeks. I mean quit for good. You'll follow me? If you can do that, you're not one of us. This is the baffling feature of alcoholism as we know it. This utter inability to leave it alone, no matter how great the necessity or the wish. You see? But I didn't hear any of that when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous in 1980. I didn't hear any of that. What I heard was a lot of stuff of talk about your problems, and if you would just line your little life around and manage better, you'd be okay. And this is what treatment centers teach. And if there's anybody from a treatment center that's teaching it, quit. Alcoholism is genetic, folks, and we get it genetically. We're wired different than normal people. And it's got nothing to do with my circumstances. Alcoholism is not a behavioral problem. We've got an industry out there that wants to turn us all into a bunch of fruitcases. Oh, we're all just mixed up people in this. No, we're not. We're the finest people on earth. The most talented, certainly in this room, the most beautiful. Jesus, I never saw anything like it. I'm glad I got a girlfriend at home. I'd be staying here. And some of you ladies would be having some homely damn babies, I can promise you. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. We're the best, folks. We're the cream of the crop. But we are wired genetically different. We laugh about it in this hospital. It's like being allergic to certain foods, you know? Anybody that's allergic to a certain food, nobody's going to jam. Some guy can't eat shellfish, right? And so I can see the therapist sitting across from him. Let's go back and talk about your mama some more, you know, because I'm... How is it that you were potty trained? Because I believe this is intricate in this shellfish problem. I can't eat shellfish because genetically I'm wired that way. Dig? That's all it is. I can't drink alcohol because my body won't metabolize it like a normal individual. Period. End of statement. It's got nothing to do with the way we were raised. And if you're in this room thinking that you're drinking and drugging has got something to do with the way you were raised or something bad that happened to you, you need to really pay attention to this talk. And after I'm gone and you finish taking my inventory, you need to get real quiet and get with somebody that understands this work and try to find out what's going on. Because we've got this idea. I can't stand this coat. We've got this idea, and it's espoused in most treatment centers, that if we would just manage better, we would stay sober. But, I mean, how do you explain the times that I made a lot of money and I had all the stuff lined up? You know, there's a line in the book in Fred's story that says that it was the end of a perfect day, not a cloud on the horizon. In the next paragraph, he gets drunk. It's like, how are you going to beat that? The end of a perfect day, not a cloud on the horizon. You see, guys, because I'm not drinking because of external circumstances. And this is real. Listen, I can see the faces. Some of you already, you're like, because you're here. Just practically peeing on myself over here. Because here's what you want to do. Here's what you want to do. You want to draw a direct line between something that happened to you or something that is happening to you and blame that for your drinking. And as long as you're doing that, you're never going to get well. You're always going to be a victim. See, there's a... Some of y'all know Marianne Williamson. I'm a big fan of her. She's written some great stuff. Here's a little paragraph. I want to read it to you. We are tempted to do in our personal lives exactly what we do in our global scale. We try to tinker with the externals, thinking that if we tinker enough with the externals, they're going to change our lives. We come to understand that if we don't change our thinking and you just change the externals, then ultimately what you're going to experience is despair of having see the whole thing blow up in your face again. And seeing it blow up again is the only thing worse than seeing it blow up. Dig? Talking to some of you guys, how many times you've been in treatment? How many times have you been to treatment? I mean, it blew up again, didn't it?
Uh-huh.
Life kicked your collective butt, didn't it? Uh-huh. And here you go again, marching back in there. How come you're back in here? She left me. Well, last time you were in here, you were telling me you were drinking because of her. And now she's gone. What is this? We got the guys in the hospital, and the guy come in and that's, you're seeing his little treatment plan. He's drinking because he's a wealthy man and there's pressure owning money and there's all this problem with having money. And the guy sitting next to him, he's drinking because he ain't got a pot to piss in, and he's really tormented about this. And so it's like these dualities. This somebody is drinking because he's got too much money. This is drinking because he ain't got any money. It's like the guy up in the penthouse we were talking about last night, looking down at the bum on the park bench, and they're both taking each other's inventory. God, if I could be there. God, if I could just be there. Everything. That's what I did all my life. God, if I could, I was a professional chef for years. God, if I could just get out of that kitchen. If I could just, go back up there and get one of those big tall hats instead of this little chicken shit Dairy Queen cap, I'd be a happy camper. I wouldn't have to drink so much. Boom, how God does? There you get the big hat. God, if I could just get to be in that other kitchen. Right there. God, if I could just get to be the sous chef. God, if I could just be the executive sous chef. God, if I could... Can you imagine what God is like? Jesus, buddy. I'm working overtime with your skinny little ass. What are we doing here? Make up your mind. God, if I could just get to be the food and beverage director. God, if I could just get out of this hotel and get the barbecue restaurant. God, if we could just get the catering company. Jesus, if I could just buy the house. Jesus, we could just sell this expensive bastard, What do we do? We do it endlessly. God, if I could just finish school. God, if we could just have kids. We laugh about it all the time. I never forget this. I went to God sitting in a parking lot in a bar that Myers worked. God, if you'll let that woman marry me. She was a cocktail waitress in this bar. And I said, if you'll let that woman marry me, I'll quit drinking. I'll quit doing cocaine. And I'll clean up my act. I was 30 years old. It's time to set some roots down, right? Man, I'm going to tell you something, guys. A month or so later, we're married. And I'm sitting in that little garage apartment I'm living in, sitting over there, back there, all hungover, watching her shovel them Cheerios in her mouth. And I'm saying, God, if you could just kill this woman right now, everything would be good. What are we doing? But we all do it. We all do it. That's why we go to open discussion meetings. And we sit around and we want to talk about the problem of the... We call it the problem du jour. The problem of the day. What is it that you think is keeping you drunk today? And I got to tell you guys, you'll chase that thread until they throw dirt on your face till you're dead. If somebody doesn't finally get you the message and tell you exactly what's wrong with you. You're not drinking because of external circumstances. Are they making your life tougher? Yes. Do you need to deal with them? Yes. Do you need to deal with them in my meeting? No. Because that's not the place to deal with them. That's a good therapist office is a place to deal with that. In a group full of your friends before and after the meeting is a place to deal with that. But during a meeting, for Christ's sake, why don't we just talk about God and the steps? Why don't we pull the newcomer with a vision of how absolutely cool life can be? See, I got to tell you. I don't know what to tell you, except that we've got ourselves in trouble with, back in the 70s and 80s with the treatment centers in the country. I don't know if around here, but that was the instruction of the day for the Catholic coming out of treatment. If you have a problem, you've done great work here for 30 days later. But if you have a problem, go to a meeting and talk about it. Where did this shit come from? I'll tell you what happened. A lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous, in our attempt to help the newcomer and make them feel comfortable, we forgot the book and just allowed it to take place. And I'm going to tell you, we came within a short period of time of losing this fellowship forever. I'll say this, folks, and I may end with it in a minute. What we need in our fellowship is more spiritual mentors and a few less junior therapists. And this grinds, you see, because everybody in this room has done it. Everybody in this room has gone into a meeting and talked about their problems. I, including myself, I've done it, and I've gotten some good feedback. You see, but the temper, and I have, and it helped me through the day. But you see, what I didn't hear for 7 years in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous is, Chris, it's time to take your little head out of your little butt now. It's time to get active and start helping others so you can start thinking about them a little bit more than your little pathetic life so that you can recover from alcoholism. See, that's the cool thing about being recovered. You know what it means to be a recovered alcoholic and drug addict? It means that I wake up every day and have for 15 years and not obsessed about alcohol and drugs. The obsession, the desire to use has been lifted from me. Those are the 10th step promises. I'm going to be taken to a place of neutrality around alcohol and drugs. And some of you in this room right here are uncomfortable having to be around it. I'm going to tell you something, folks. That's a terrible place to be. To be dry. Sober one day at a time and not be able to be around alcohol or drugs. Worried about the next day that you might start thinking about it again and go down the toilet. Recovered alcoholics and drug addicts is a position of neutrality around alcohol and drugs. That's what you need to be. That's where you need to go. But it's not going to happen by sitting in a meeting talking about your chicken shit problem. It's just not. There's places to do that. AA is not one of them. Y'all with me? Y'all understand what I'm saying? Okay, if everybody's real clear that alcoholism and drug addiction is not about the problems, then why do we allow it to happen? And you see, it's not the personalities. It's not that guy back there, every time he comes in, he bitches about his problems. That's not the problem. The format allows it. If the format of the meeting allows it, that's what you're going to get. You're going to get people coming in talking about the problem. Change the meetings. Make them literature-based meetings where you open a paragraph and you read a couple of paragraphs in the book and then discuss that so the newcomer can start getting some hope. And if somebody's coming apart at the seams, grab them and take them out after the meeting and let's help them. Let's get them, help them get connected with a problem. Help them understand what it's about. I'm down with that. But sitting in a meeting, the 1 hour a day that we have to talk about God and the steps and wasted on your chicken shit problem, I tell you, it's a damn travesty. Listen, folks. I heard these knuckleheads in the States say it all the time. They get up here, especially when they're taking a cake, you know, they're picking up a chip. You know, I'm 15 years sober, and I know less about this program now than I did when I got here. You hear it? It's an attempt at humility. But I'm telling you, it's absolute horse shit. You see, if you're 15 years around this fellowship, folks, I'm going to tell you something. If you know how to work the steps and you know how to have a spiritual experience, why in the hell are you standing up from a podium saying that you don't understand how this thing works? We know exactly how it works. Everybody in here is allowed to have a spiritual experience. Everybody in here, it's to the taking. What we got to do is carry that message to the newcomer. Some of you guys continue to relapse over and over and over. You're running out of time, folks. You're running out of relapses. You know, you pick up one chip and done. There's people in here that got sober. One, boom, done. And we just think it's perfectly okay for you to go back out. It's not. We need you in the trenches. We need you in the trenches working, helping us help others to stay sober. You see, nobody can affect another alcoholic and addict like another alcoholic and addict. You have to have experienced this to know what it's about. If you follow us, people that are not alcoholic and addict can't help me. Because I won't identify. You can't. If I want to know about sex, just say hypothetically that I wanted to know about sex. And you got a choice. You got two twin brothers, and they're coming like me and Myers. Now, what happened with me and Myers is like, we want to know about sex. And so Myers, he went and read a lot of books. He got a lot of books, and he bought the Playboy, and he bought all the other stuff, and he's looking and reading and looking, pointing, and we got a little diagram, and he knows a lot about having sex. I went to the drive-in and had some sex. Now, you want to come up after this meeting and talk to somebody that knows about sex? You want to go to somebody that has read about it, or you want to go to somebody that's done it? Come on, ladies. The first thing you do when you get pregnant is you go find some of your friends that have been pregnant. Don't talk to somebody that hasn't. They don't have a clue what it's about. Isn't that the truth? You want to start a business. Go talk to somebody that started a business. You want to go get dental work. Go talk to somebody that's had dental work. It's identification. You want to talk to an alcoholic. You got a problem with alcohol and you need some help. Go talk to somebody that's recovered. And they can help you. They can show you what it's about. And that's our job in this fellowship. That's our job. Everybody in here. You think you got sober just so you could be Mr. Nice Guy? You got sober so you could turn around and help somebody else. That's what it's about. Nobody told me that for 7 years. Now I'm going to talk about that. I don't die up here. Must have been the shark testicles or whatever they were we ate. I don't know. I don't know what they were. I don't know what they were. I just say. I was drinking early on in high school, and we were talking to some of the cats earlier about this. You know, I believe all of us in an early age, once we started drinking, if we'd had the Weatherall to say, this is looking grim, maybe we could have stopped. But see, most of us that things started going weird on, we got to a place where we were already so deep in the quicksand we couldn't get out anyway. We still think we can get out, and that's the problem in our fellowship. Everybody thinks they can quit. So when a newcomer comes in, what we need to do is qualify them. We need to find out first, before we talk to them about anything else, we need to qualify them and find out if they're in the right room or not. Are they really an alcoholic or not? 10-second claimer here. 10 seconds so you can understand what I'm talking about. In case we got people that are not working the steps in here. An alcoholic is somebody that physically is different than a normal person because they can't metabolize alcohol. And they have a thing called a phenomenon called craving that kicks in. And once you start to drink or once you start to take the drug, you can't control this. Remember the word control, the amounts you're going to take. Y'all with us? The problem is not because I drink. The problem is that I drink a lot. Dig? And if I could not drink a lot, I wouldn't have gone to jail and I wouldn't have done the crazy, stupid stuff I did. I drank too much. Why can't I learn from my mistakes? It's like we laughed about it this morning in our little workshop. I mean, how many of you guys in here ever were out drinking and got sick, leaned over the bushes and puked your guts out? Last thing you saw were your toenails coming up. Yeah? And then you walk right back up to the bar, wipe your mouth and blame it on the chicken. God, it must have been the stupid chicken. Yeah, one more. And you drink another. I mean, that's not normal. Your body's soaking that stuff up. Physical allergy is one piece. And then you get the second piece, the mental obsession. Why can't you stop? When given sufficient reason, it's just like what they talk about with Dr. Bob. He wanted to stop, but he couldn't figure out why he couldn't stop. Why do we keep going back? Come on, guys. Why do you go to treatment once and then go back out and drink again and go back to treatment and then go back out? Can't you learn from your mistakes? Are you... I was talking to a mother of a patient in the hospital the other day. She says, he just went back again. He wasn't out of treatment 2 weeks and he was drinking again. I just think he's crazy. And we're getting close, hon. I think you're finally starting to catch on what this is about here. Guys, the book doesn't use the word denial. We're not going to look at this. We're looking at it. It's like my ass is on fire and everybody's going, Chris, your butt's on fire. And I'm like, you know, I don't see anything wrong. Isn't that right? We're all going down. You know, and it's like everybody's looking around like it's unbelievable. Unbelievable. That's the insanity of the first drink. Why do I keep going back to it? And if you have the power to stop, then you're not one of us. But if you have had... How many of you guys in this room have had significant reason to quit? The book says on page 21, just some of y'all are wearing the little stickers, I'm the person on page 21. I understand today, getting over here, that your pages don't line up with our pages, but sorry, I'll figure it out and send you some new stickers. But yeah. How many of you had sufficient reason to stop and we quit for a period of time and then we started drinking again? You see, your family members, look at that. Your family members think, here's what they think. But he's just lying to us. You know, alcoholics and addicts, they're all a bunch of liars. That's not true. Some of us are. Some of us have character defects of lying. But some of us in this room are the most honest people on earth. Don't blame your dishonesty on alcoholism. It's ridiculous. Listen, there was a time in 1980, there was a little domestic disturbance in my house. And after I was let back in the house, it was about 4 o'clock in the morning, and I was ripped on alcohol and cocaine, and I was in a bad shape. But I mean, as I'm coming down off this, I realized what I did, and I scared the daylights out of her, and it scared the daylights out of me. And I went to her, I mean, with tears in my eyes, and said, I'm never going to do that again. I'm becoming somebody I don't want to be. One day it seemed like I had the alcohol and drugs, and the next day It had me. Y'all understand that? And it's not that I'm drinking to avoid anything. I'm drinking to... Y'all understand the term get right? No, I'm drinking to get okay in my own skin. I started drinking that morning, just a couple of beers just to kind of settle an old nerve so I could go to work and just take care of business. I wasn't drinking at 7 o'clock in the morning because I was partying down, guys. Everybody thinks that that's what this... I mean, our family members, he just parties too much. If that's all you're doing, then quit partying. It's like this moron with Nancy Reagan, you know? Just say no. What? I mean, I hope I get a chance to see her before she dies so I can kill her. I mean, God, I'm just joking. But I mean, God, how can you say something so stupid to somebody that's tried a million times? We've gone to our significant others. We've gone to the court. You think when I was standing in front of that judge and I told him I was quit, I meant it. When I went to that woman that night on bended knees and begged her forgiveness and said, I'm never going to drink and drug again, I meant it. Dr. Bob in the archives, his Bible has got two places where he signed his name in blood, a blood oath. I am never going to drink again. Now, buddy, he wasn't blowing smoke up anybody's ass. He meant it. Did he have the power to manage the decision to stay stopped? Did y'all get it? Did he have the power to manage the decision to stay stopped? We're great quitters, folks. We're just better starters. And the insanity is, I don't remember the consequences of a week or a month ago, and I just go back and do it again and again and again. And it progressively gets worse, and the stuff hits the fan. In 1980, as a result of that domestic disturbance, I got hooked up with a therapist that talked to me for about 5 minutes. He said, Chris, you've been in therapy all your life. I can't tell you anything that you don't already know. And I have. I've been in therapy since I was a teenager, on and off. And I've been taking antidepressants, I need to tell you that, forever. I don't take them today, thank God. Because of the spiritual experience for me. But I took them for all of my adult life because this depression was killing me. You see, nobody bothered to remind me that depression was the number one symptom of alcoholism and drug addiction. See, but we're trying to treat it with a pill. See, so in 1980, when I go to this therapist, she says, Chris, you need to get your butt to Alcoholics Anonymous because you're nothing but a drunk. She's looking at my chart, bipolar, you know, manic depressive, all this. I mean, I've got the laundry list of diseases. Y'all got them here. It's the same stuff. It's just your diseases are colder than my diseases. I never felt cold like yesterday. It's unbelievable. But y'all understand. So I go to this therapist, and she finally tells me the truth, and she says, go to AA. And so I walk in the doors, my first trip to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'll never forget it. It was downtown Denton, Texas, and I walk up these stairs, you know, the dark upstairs, and there's one light in this room. Downtown Denton, Texas. I walk up, and there's one light, and there's this old man. This I don't know how old this geezer was. Old. Older than me, for Christ's sake. And he's sitting in this big old easy chair. He's all flopped back on his big old... I thought he was dead. You know, I walk in and you can't see and the light's so dim and everybody's smoking in there. And there's six people in this room, including myself. And he says, do you have a problem with alcohol? I said, well, hope the kid's a pig. I guess I do. I mean, I just finished a court in the truck. Does that qualify? I mean, I've been drinking all afternoon long, but I go to this AA meeting and I walk in. And he says, well, then you're welcome. And that was the extent of the qualification. You got a problem with alcohol. And that's the qualifying thing for membership in AA. But see, nobody ever told me that there's another thing you got to do in order to get well. You can come into this fellowship. If you got a desire to be sober, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. You got a desire to stay off the drug, welcome to Narcotics Anonymous, Cocaine Anonymous. You follow me? But if you want to get well, buddy, there's bigger and better requirements than that. You've got to be willing to do certain things to get connected to God. This is a program of action. And you can't get connected just because you want to or just because you need to. You've got to do the work. Nobody said anything about me. We sat in that meeting and we talked about this lady in there and her husband was drinking. And we talked about that lady's husband all night long. For an hour, we talked about this lady's husband. Oh, my life's a wreck. We listened to piss and moan. Everybody went around piss and moan. I walked out and says, God damn, I need a drink. This is... And I got a drink. And then the wife, she says, it's time to go back. You said you were going to go to AA. Let's make a stab at it. And I went to another meeting. And that's exactly what we did. And we know when we finished talking about your problems, you know what we did? We told the stupid ass war stories. Until the cows came home. Folks, there's one place to tell a war story. I'll say this. There's two places. You can tell them from the podium. It's entertaining. It's the place to do it. The other place is in a thing called a 12-step call. Once they come into the meeting, they're here. We have them. There was obviously something that got them here. Now then, you got a choice. Are you going to scare them with your chicken shit war story? Or are you going to pull them with a vision of how cool your life is? And we're taught to share the story. I've said this from a podium 1,000 times. We kill women by the thousands in our fellowship by trying to tell our Billy Badass war stories. We kill the young people by the untold thousands because we're too busy telling about our stupid drunkalogs and our time we've spent in prison. And I mean, this is my experience. I've shared it from a million podiums. This is my experience. I walk into an AA meeting, busted, so hopeless I wanted to die, suicidal, nutcase, absolutely convinced that this wouldn't work for me. You with me? But I've walked into this stupid meeting one more time. Oh, we have a newcomer. Let's tell him how we got here. Now, why in the living hell would I want to know how you got here? I don't even know how I got here, you know, and I'm here. And here's what you're going to do. And you're going to go around the room and you're going to tell your little war stories. They don't know anything about me. I'm a professional chef, right? I got a lot of stuff going on in my life. I'm making a little money. I got a nice wife at home. Everything's, you know what I'm saying? But I'm dying inside of the thing called a spiritual malady. Guys, spiritual malady. Irritable, restless, discontent, depressed, fearful, anxious, no, a feeling of uselessness. That's prey to misery and depression is what the book says. Y'all with us? No sense of direction. That's what the spiritual malady is, and that's what I'm experiencing. But they don't. Who cares about that? We're gonna tell everybody how we got here. Oh, this guy's been in prison twice. I've never been to jail. Checking. This guy had 60 WIs and beat up his wife. I've never laid a hand on a woman ever. No, never. Check. Never had a DWI. This guy blacked out and killed 6 people. Check, 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 check. I can't relate. I can't relate. You know, you're scaring the daylights out of me. You know, I'm thinking, God, you know, and here's what my mind's. You've all done it. You're sitting there and listening to the stupid war stories and says, man, I can't relate to that. And I tell you, but if I get, I'll tell you this, if I ever get as bad as that asshole, I'll quit. We didn't talk about the internal condition. We didn't talk about the discomfort that was going to be treated by the spiritual experience. All we did was talk about the external circumstances. Can you imagine a businesswoman here in Reykjavik coming into this place and she's been drinking and she comes into a noon meeting and she's freaked out because she doesn't want to drink, but she knows that this is a safe place. She's going to try to get some help. And so we go around and talk about prison and treatment and chopping up people and all the stupid war stories. And the lady, and we've watched them 1,000 times, and the ladies just get up quietly, got their little purse. Thank you. Thank you for sharing so openly with me. And out the door. And we never see him again. You know, and we think we've done our job. You didn't do your job. All you did was take the chicken shit way out by telling your stupid, tired story. The book says we got a common problem that's one element in the powerful cement. Our war stories, our problems with alcohol and drugs is one powerful, one element. But that in itself could not hold us together as we're now joined. It says on page 17. The good news is that we got a common solution. On page 17 in our book, it says, we have a common solution. That means I don't care if you're black, white. I don't care if you're from Iceland or the United States. I don't care. I don't care if you've been molested. I don't care if you've been adopted. I don't care if you're dyslexic. I don't care if you're bipolar. I don't give a rat's butt what happened to you in the past. Here's what my book says. My book says that if you will follow certain dictates of a higher power, you're presently going to be taken to a new and wonderful place no matter what your circumstances. So what I need to do is impart that with you. Buddy, I know you're having a bad day. Give it a rest for a minute and listen to us and let us tell you how we got our credit cards back. Let us tell you how we got some cool relationships going. Let us tell you about our creative lives that got excited and the business that we started and going back to school. Let us share with you a little bit of the good stuff. Everybody wants to come up after. Well, Chris, you know this. I mean, AA meeting can't just be one big pep rally. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Bless your heart. My question to you is, why can't it? Because in the early days of Alcoholics Anonymous, it was. We would get together and we would pray. They brought a Bible into the room and we prayed and we talked and we went around and we bore witness to the power of God in our lives. And that's what we did. And we got so smart 67 years later, we can't do that anymore. Because we're too busy trying to fix what's wrong with you so you can be okay and not drink. Guys, we did it this morning. I just want to do it one time just so I feel better. How many of you guys drank and drug when your life was absolutely stupendous? You can feel the tension. How many of you drank and drug when your life was shit? All right, so let's rest the case. That's what the little issue man pins are about, folks. The little X's on the outside, those are issues. And those are issues that you think you're drinking over and you're not drinking over. And this is really powerful stuff, folks. And I know it offends some of you. Because some of you guys have been wearing this shit around like a badge of honor. You know, it's like a here. You walk in, first thing you do is, hi, my name's Chris Redd. Hi, I was molested. Come on, guys. I know that's off color, and I'm not making fun of that. I'm sorry you were, but it's got nothing to do with whether you can get sober or not. Nothing. And, you know, there's an industry out there called the treatment center industry that's making a gazillion dollars off your ass. It's big business. It's big money. Big medicine. The doctors are cranking out new anti-craving drugs every day to help you guys get off the stuff. And you know what? None of it works. None of it works. What difference does it make if you can get an anti-craving drug? What about an anti-obsession drug? Because, see, that's what I can't beat. And that's what we've got to do. Let me tell you what happened. 7 years into this, in and out, hundreds of meetings. I'm proof positive that meeting makers don't make it. Because I went to a zillion meetings. 90 meetings in 90 days. I went to 120 meetings in 90 days. I'm going to tell you something, folks. And I almost died. You know, sit there, watch the clock. You know, you don't want to be there. You'll see the guys, they don't want... Tick. Tick. Just want to pull your hair out. You're like, this guy ain't going to ever get something. You get up and go smoke a cigarette. Go get a cup of coffee. Go take a big long dump. Come back. You know, smoke another cigarette. Anything to get out because you don't want to be in the rooms. You see, because you haven't understood what your place is. You're not in the rooms to hear something. I don't care if you're one day sober. You're not in the room to hear anything. You're in the room to give something back. You're in the room to give something back. And when you get to a place where you understand that your place, you have a job, and that's to help somebody else, when you start worrying about the newcomer more than you're worrying about staying sober, you'll stay sober. Because you can't keep yourself sober. Working with a newcomer, nothing works better. But try to get somebody to understand that. Let me Reader's Digest condense because I'm going to run out of time. I was working for my brother. I was in the food business for a long time, but I couldn't stay in the food business. I couldn't go that long without drinking, and I couldn't hold a knife anymore. Well, it was pretty scary to watch me anyway with a knife. I was shaking a little quick with a knife. And Myers had me working in his bookbinder. You know, he used to make jokes, get on the PA, cancel Chris's surgery this morning, you know, because I'd be over there trying to hold a book, you know, and my hands would be shaking so bad. And like, if I hadn't had a family, I mean, I'd have been on the street. But I had a brother that gave me a job, and I was grateful for it. And I don't think I've ever thanked him enough for that. I just, you know how it is. So, I mean, just grateful to have the damn job. And I worked for him for a long time. In the first few years, I was worthless in that job. But I went home one day after work, and it was about 3:30 in the afternoon. It was cold in November of in Dallas, and not any, like, cold for you guys, but cold for us. I got a 12-pack of beer and went home, and I picked up a stack of return checks out of the mailbox. And I'm 35 years old, and I'm about 200 pounds, and that's all right here. And liver damage and kidney damage. I mean, I'm going down the toilet, and I'm miserable. And suicide is with me on a daily basis. And I don't want to live like this. See, I know who my dad raised, and it wasn't who I'm looking at in the mirror. See, that's not. And I said, to heck with it. And I called Sarah, called Anit, she answered the phone, and I backed out. I was going to tell her something, say goodbye, and I backed out. And I hung up the phone, said hi, visited, hung up the phone, asked if you were there, and went straight to the bathroom, got a bottle of pills and some booze, and tried to commit suicide. This means in the fucking water, it makes you so emotional up here. I don't know. See, guys, people... People don't want to commit suicide. I didn't want to die. What I wanted to do was stop feeling like I was feeling. Can y'all get down with that? It wasn't that I was going to make some big dramatic exit. I'll show the world. Screw them. You know, I was just tired of hurting, waking up every day, not wanting to hurt anybody and knowing that I was going to hurt myself and everybody around me. And I took the pills. And this is what we were talking about this morning in spiritual experience. I heard that as those pills went down my throat, I heard a voice that said, Chris, don't do it. Go back to AA. We've laughed about it 1,000 times. Said it again. Chris, don't do it. Go back to AA. Now, guys, did I hear the words? I don't. It could have been the guy's vacuum cleaner next to me. Really, like, I don't know what it was. I heard, Chris, don't do it. Go back to AA. I don't want to go back to AA. AA sucks. You can't get well in AA. I've done it for 7 years. No, you didn't. Go back to AA. I aborted that suicide attempt. The next day, I went to a doctor, got some detox meds, and at 6 o'clock that night, detoxing from alcohol and a lot of drugs, I walked into an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, in a different meeting than I'd ever been to before. An old guy had done a 12-step call on me once, and he showed me where this meeting was. It was after my first blackout. He said, Chris, if you want to go to this meeting, let's go now. He says, I don't want to go. I just had one blackout. I didn't have as many as you, so I'm not ready to go yet. And I left. But I knew where the meeting was because he had taken time to show me. You'll follow me? And that night, cold November night, November 13th, 1987, bad luck for some people, great luck for me. I walked into a room full of people that loved me enough to finally tell me the truth. There was a young 19-year-old girl that got between me and the door because when they were laughing, I knew they were laughing at me because I stunk and I looked like hell and I had been crying and I started to back out and I stepped on this little girl, 19 years old. And she stood between me and the door and she said, you're not going nowhere. Sit down. Yeah. That's why it drives me crazy when I hear people discount the young people in our meetings. You see, because if it hadn't been for a 19-year-old girl in that meeting, it wasn't a young adult meeting. It was just a discussion meeting, but it was a literature-based. They all carried big books. And that girl sat me down and patted my little leg, got me a cup of coffee and a roll of paper towels to clean up the mess, you know, a little quick on the coffee cup. And we go on. Y'all know, a little jerky. And she cleaned up the mess, and everybody had a good laugh. But I'm telling you, for the first time, they all went around the room, and they all shared the good stuff. The chairperson had seen me for years in and out of the fellowship. Says, Chris, we don't need to do a little first-step meeting here. What we need to do is pull this guy with a vision, quote, unquote. We need to talk about how our lives have changed as a result of working the steps. And they did that. There was about 15 people that shared the good stuff in their life, the relationships that were mended, the money that was coming back, the improved health. And they were going, and they at the end of the meeting, they had me crying. At the end of the meeting, they said, Chris, do you want to stay sober for good and for all? Old timer came up. He said, do you want to stay sober for good and for all? And I said, the worst thing I could say. I said, well, one day at a time. They said, Chris, that's not in the book that we read. We live life one day at a time. You stay sober by making a fucking commitment. Do you want to stay sober from now on? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I do. We're going to show you how. Next morning, they got me back up. They followed me back to the AA meeting. They made sure I went back because I was freaking out. And they followed me back. They said, we're going to do a third step prayer. 2 days into detox, third step prayer. That afternoon, noontime, they gave me the information on the fourth step. 2 days in detox, working on my fourth step. 2 weeks later, I've got a completed fourth step, and I'm ready to do a fifth step. And I'm laughing with my sponsor. I said, you're not going to believe the shit I'm seeing in this. He said, of course I'm going to believe it because I found the same thing in mine. I found out in a heartbeat that I wasn't the victim I thought I was. You know what I'm saying? That all the times I've been telling everybody. I mean, guys, selfish and self-centeredness is what we find out in the fourth step. What's our problem? Selfish and self-centeredness is the root of our problem. And you guys want to dovetail into it. Isn't that right? Every time you go into a meeting, you want to talk about something bad? Selfish and self-centered to the core. You're not worried about the guy up here on the front row that's detoxing. You just want to talk about your chicken shit problem again. Isn't that what we do?
Oh, you just don't understand.
I'm having. I just cracked me up. I mean, I'm just having such a bad day, and I just need a place to share and talk about it. Unbelievable. Let me tell you. No. The guy that's sitting back by the door that's still stinking of gin, You with me? That just wrote the hot check that was going to break the bank account? That's going to put him back in prison? You with us? That just screamed at his kids and he's got the memory of those little kids huddled back in the corner? He's having an absolute shitty day. But we're not going to get to help him because we're too busy trying to take care of you. The absolute arrogance of us to come into meetings and do that crap. How many times did I do? I'm blind in one eye and. What? We didn't get the inheritance we thought we were going to get. We talk about everything. My favorite. I have this small penis and. After a while, you just run out of shit to complain about. You know, you got to start being unbelievable. And everybody looks, oh, yes. Well, we'll talk about that after the meeting. You know, I went home that night, and real quick, I went home that night, and it was 2 weeks exactly after I took those pills. And I pulled up in my apartment complex in Louisville, Texas, and there's a 7-Eleven, like a stop-and-go thing, little convenience stores where you buy booze, and there's a liquor store over there, and there's a restaurant that I've got a tab on. There's four places I can buy booze. I could throw this little book and hit those places from where I'm sitting in this parking lot. You with me? And my other issue, like the cocaine, my cocaine dealer is in the same apartment complex I live in, and it's a Friday. Myers just giving me a paycheck, and I got money in my pocket, and I live by myself, and there ain't a person there that can stop me. And I pull down the tailgate of my truck because I'm hiring a kite. I'm thinking, Jesus, what happened? What's going on? And I start crying. And I don't mean a little sniffy. I mean bawling like a baby. Because for the first time in my adult life, it dawns on me that the obsession to drink and to drug has been lifted from me. And there's nothing to stop me from going to get loaded. I deserve it. I've been sober 2 weeks. But sanity has returned, and I recovered. I recovered from alcoholism and drug addiction. And I got to tell you something, folks. That was 15 years ago. 15 years ago, and the obsession to use has never come back. We paint this picture for the newcomer that if everything goes okay, you can stay sober. And that's the most dangerous thing that we can do in Alcoholics Anonymous. What kind of... Peter was talking about it last night. If lack of power is my problem, folks, then I need a way to get some power. And that's what it says on page 45. I need some power in all areas of my life. Anybody can stay sober when everything's going great. But what happens when the kid gets sick? What happens when you lose the job? What happens when life doesn't do what you want it to do? It's a bear out there. Life is not going to go your way every time. What are you going to do? Oh, stay away from you. Don't do anything that would possibly trigger you back into drinking. God did not get Chris Raymer sober so I could walk on eggshells the rest of my life. That's the best news that I can give you. Wife or no job, wife or no wife, job or no job, you can stay sober. That's what my book says. But nobody bothered to ever tell me that for 7 years. And they finally told me that I could stay sober even when things were going shitty. I did a fifth step, finished some amends, and was working with others rapidly. Folks, they gave me a job the first week I was there to answer the phones in this stupid AA club. Chris, answer the phones. Buddy, you answer your own fucking phones. That's it. I'm sitting in this room detoxing and you want me to answer the phones? How do you expect me to do that? It's real easy. You say, Louisville group. It's just that simple, you know? I ain't answering these phones. Phone starts ringing. I never forget it. Might as well remember it. The couch right here. There's a pay phone right. And the phone's ringing. I'm looking at them. They're looking at me. And I finally realize they're not going to answer this damn phone. They're looking over their glasses. They're looking at me. And what do I do? Say, Louisville group. They helped me. They showed. Louisville group. God, it's Al-Anon lady. She wants a meeting. Well, there's a meeting schedule. They showed me where the meeting schedules were. Y'all have to stand there. It's like, yes, we have an Al-Anon meeting tonight at 7 o'clock. And I was talking to this girl, and I realized that I know this girl. I drank with her husband. She used to have a place right behind the barbecue restaurant I owned. And we used to get shit-faced together. And I said, hey, I know you. And she says, I know you. I said, are you sober? I said, yeah, I'm sober a few days now. She says, can we talk? I said, absolutely. I'll wait for you out front. Like I had anything else to do, you know? No social calendar I had. And I met her out front, and I told her, you know what I'm saying, guys? But for the first time, here's what happened. I hung up the phone like this. I took care of it. Isn't that right? For the first time in my life, I wasn't sitting in your meeting. I was sitting in my meeting. And it wasn't your club. It was my club. You follow me? They created a monster. For the next 6 months, you couldn't go near that fucking phone. If I was in the room, phone would ring. Oh, no. No, I got it. You could kill somebody if you answer this phone wrong. I mean, I got this phone. But I got me a job in Alcoholics Anonymous. I got me a job. And if you don't have a job in Alcoholics Anonymous, you need to get one. Because if you don't have a job, you're not going to stay. You're not going to stay. You make the coffee, you clean up, you whatever your little niche is, you find it, and you stay. We need you. I got to get out of here. I got to tell you right now. Guys, I don't know how to explain this to you. Y'all got such a core group here in this town. You think you're in hot water in AA, and the truth is, I've seen some of the purest, most unadulterated program, not fellowship, program that I have ever seen in all my talking out there, guys. And I travel a lot. I'm on the road about 30 weekends out of the year speaking at places. And I'm going to tell you something, guys. You are blessed to have the information that you have. And there's a group of you guys out here, and there's a lot of you that are carrying the message and doing what you're going to do. I'm going to tell you something. I can't wait to come back in 5 years and see what y'all are doing in this fellowship, because it is absolutely phenomenal. Yeah. You really should. You really should be pleased with what you're doing. You guys can understand. By working the steps, I get connected to a power greater than myself. And when I get connected to that power, I have a thing called a spiritual experience, and the desire to drink and drug leaves. And we need every one of you in these trenches. I don't care whether it's on this island or in another country or back in the States, wherever. We need you in the trenches. Guys, people right now in this city right now are dying of overdoses, or dying of terrible alcoholism. Folks, I got to tell you, people are out there having terrible times, and the only place they're going to get well, only place, are in these fellowships. In Narcotics Anonymous, and Cocaine Anonymous, and Alcoholics Anonymous, hearing the pure, clean message. And guys, everybody in the place is not going to want to get sober, and everybody in the guy that 12-stepped me said, Chris, I got my feelings hurt one night because somebody said, you know, I was talking to some of the guys, y'all are having the same experience. Well, I brought my big book in and I started reading. They told me to shut up and not read the big book. It's just, you know, quit. I said, no, and I got my feelings hurt when the first time somebody did that. And I left. I said, fuck AA, I'm not coming back. You know, they said, Chris, if you have been around this fellowship longer than 6 months and you haven't thoroughly pissed off somebody, you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. Do I think we ought to go look for fights? No. My book says we cease fighting anything or anyone, including Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not here to fight with anybody. Not any group, not any guru, not anybody in this fellowship am I wanting to fight with. And I'm not gonna. I don't have to defend what's in this big book. But guys, sooner or later, everybody in this room is going to have to stand for something. You can start right now being the person that God wants you to be. Or you can continue to make excuses why you're not that person. Y'all got that? It's real simple. You can be happy, joyous, and free. That is a choice. Whether you drink or not is not. You need the spiritual experience in order to get taken to that place. But you've got a choice whether you're going to be happy, joyous, and free. And whether you're going to come into a meeting looking for the newcomer, or you're going to come into the meeting just to sulk and get sympathy. Because if that's all you're doing, please spare us. Selfish and self-centeredness is the root of the problems. Not drugs. Not alcohol. I must get out of myself. That means I must be here for you if I can help you. I can tell you this right now. I got cards up here. If any of you guys ever need help in the States, you got loved ones that are in trouble, you call me and I'll help you get connected. If you need some literature, I'll send it to you. I'll tell you this. I'll be your buddy to the day you die. But I'll tell you what I'm not going to do. I'm not going to look the other way while you kill people with your misinformation and your opinions about what this program is about. I'm not going to pat you on the back because you just keep coming back and continue to relapse. After a while, folks, it gets a little tiring. You follow us? We need to save some room for the real newcomers. You come back after 6 or 7 slips, you're not a newcomer anymore. You're just a relapser. And you wonder why people don't take anything you say with credibility. Come on, guys. We need you in the trenches. I absolutely love every one of you, and I'm grateful that you asked me to come speak. I'll see you soon. Thank you.